Hi, this is Charles at democraticfundamentalism.org. It's Friday, the 25th of October, and you're listening to the News in Review. Well, just when you think the news is going to be good, it turns bad. It does seem to be how it goes sometimes. Woke up this morning to the news of the death of Senator Paul Wellstone of Minnesota. As I've said before, he's been a favorite in this household for a long time. He will indefinitely be missed. I'll talk about that a little more. Of course, there's the good news, the capture of the pair I've described as the D.C. snipers. I'll bring you the story and a few thoughts. I'll take a moment or two to remind you about the protests and demonstrations for peace that will be going on all over the country and the world this weekend. In entertainment, it's kind of interesting what Robert Redford is up to these days. Woody Harrelson's doing some fun stuff, too. Rod Stewart's got a great new album out. And, of course, there's more news on the JT front and a new album by Santana as well. And good old Uncle Lou Dobbs came through with another excellent Moneyline program yesterday on CNN. I know he cringes every time I say that. I don't know why I know that. I just know it. Anyway, I especially enjoyed the informative segment on EBBS, a fun way to embrace some of the underlying truths about financial reporting in the stock market. Lots of good stuff on that program. I'll even give it my best shot to find a way to explain what EBBS means. Hope I can. But more importantly, why it concerns your investments. And all of that reminds me of my current favorite bumper sticker. I'll tell you about that later, too. I just want to keep you sticking around for something. So, as I like to remind people linking into the broadcast from other sites, that at democraticfundamentalism.org, I do my best to provide links to stories from sources like CNN, and Time, The Washington Post, New York Times, to provide greater detail and insight into the things I discuss in these reports. So I always say, you don't have to take my word for anything, because I don't have to make this stuff up. Sad, but true. Really not sure what to say about the death of Senator Paul Wellstone, his wife, daughter, staff, and pilots. In my estimation, it really was a true American tragedy. Wellstone is quite well known as a type of champion of the people, the kind who inspire me. He and his family and staff are all passionate people with incredible integrity and purpose, and the contribution he and these other people made to people and to this country are immeasurable in many different domains. To say the least, the news makes me very sad. You can learn a lot more about Senator Paul Stone, Wellstone, and about his family and other people surrounding these incidents on the CNN website at the link provided here in the text. Story: Democratic Senator Paul Wellstone, his wife Sheila, and daughter Marsha died Friday in a small plane crash near Eveleth, Minnesota, that also killed three staff members and two pilots. The plane went down in snowy, frozen rain and then burst into flames in a wooded area about 7 miles east of Eveleth, Virginia Municipal Airport. Officials said the last contact with the plane was at 10:20 a.m. Central Daylight Time, when the plane was about 2 miles from the airport. Choking back tears, a Senate colleague expressed his sympathy. He was such a good man, and his wife, too, said Patrick Leahy of Vermont. All of these people had families, and they had friends, and this is a horrible, horrible thing. Such sentiments were echoed by Republicans. He always had just had a love for every person, because you knew everything that he was talking about, he deeply believed in and deeply cared about. That from Senator Sam Brownback, a Republican of Kansas. And then he cared deeply about the people around him. He was a very engaging person. In other news, authorities in Maryland were able to apprehend a man and his accomplice, who appear to be the men behind the shooting in and around Washington, D.C. It's very sad at the senseless loss of those who were shot, but I must say it is good to know that this particular threat is over. From CNN, the headlines: sniper suspects to face 7 murder counts. Prosecutors in 2 states plan to bring at least 7 first-degree murder charges against the 2 men being held as suspects in the Washington, D.C. deadly sniper shooting spree. Authorities in Alabama and Maryland say they'll bring first-degree murder charges against the two men, but only in Maryland do both face the death penalty. Montgomery County, Maryland prosecutors Friday said they plan to file 6 counts of first-degree murder against the two sniper suspects. However, while Maryland State Attorney Douglas Gansler said his prosecutors will not seek the death penalty against 17-year-old Lee Boyd Malvo, they do plan to try him as an adult. Authorities had previously identified him as John Lee Malvo. Earlier in Montgomery, Alabama, Police Chief John Wilson said Alabama officials will seek the death penalty against both suspected snipers, John Allen Muhammad and Malvo, in connection with the killing of a woman in Montgomery. Malvo and Muhammad may also face the death penalty in Virginia, where several of the sniper killings took place. Virginia has yet to file charges against the men. Obviously, we have different views in Maryland and Virginia on whether to apply the death penalty to a juvenile, Gansler said. We don't feel the death penalty is appropriate for juveniles. Also Friday, the FBI issued a federal material witness warrant for Nathaniel Osborne, said to be a friend of Muhammad. Federal agents said they only want to question Osborne in relation to the sniper probe. They don't believe he's a suspect. We think we can shed some light on the investigation, FBI Special Agent Linda Veazey said on Thursday. Personally, I want to commend Chief Charles Moose for an excellent job in doing whatever was necessary to apprehend these people. He's a man whose commitment to serve his community is clear, and the job he has done in this matter has been exceptional. Despite the tragic losses during the ordeal, I believe he conducted himself in an effective and inspiring manner and deserves our congratulations and respect and sincere thanks. Now, I just want to say a few things, read you a little story from the International Action Center. That, by the way, was founded by Ramsey Clark. He was the former U.S. Attorney General of the United States. He was also there in Iraq. You might remember him being on TV talking about, trying to prevent the ability of the United States to launch an attack on Iraq. Don't forget that the actions in Washington, D.C. are occurring. A joint action with folks in San Francisco, and in fact protests are going on all across the country. Just go to the International Action Center. Of course, there are numerous links to that website here at democraticfundamentalism.org, and I encourage you to participate. First anniversary of the signing of the so-called Patriot Act. Anti-war, civil rights, labor, student, and other forces are joining together to launch a massive international mobilization in opposition to a new war against the people of Iraq. Mass marches and rallies will be held in Washington, D.C. and San Francisco, in the United States, and in many other countries. As the Bush administration violates international law, it has been systematically engaged in a campaign of division and repression in the United States, including a wholesale assault on the Bill of Rights, institutionalization of racial profiling, and aggregation of near-dictatorial powers to the executive branch. In articulating the so-called doctrine of preemptive war, the Bush administration is preparing to violate all existing international law and the UN Charter, which forbids countries to carry out war except in the case of self-defense. Preemption is merely a slogan to justify a foreign policy of armed aggression and military adventure. Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, and company are planning to send tens of thousands of young GIs to kill and be killed in another war for big oil. Simultaneously, the Bush administration is diverting billions of dollars to feed military conquest and away from jobs, education, health care, child care, and housing. The so-called debate that is opening now to the public view from within the political establishment presents a necessity for all anti-war forces to become a major factor in generating an authentic opposition to U.S. war plans in the Middle East. The October 26th National March in Washington, D.C., and joint action in San Francisco come just 1 week before midterm congressional elections. There won't be a real national debate on a planned invasion of Iraq until the people are in the streets. We can't leave it to the military establishment to decide when and how they will go to war and to define the debate. We must tell Bush and his corporate and big oil patrons that we will not allow this to happen. This war can be stopped. Bush, Rumsfeld, Cheney, Wolfowitz, and company can be stopped, but the essential element must be the mobilization of a massive new anti-war movement in the streets. We call for civilians and soldiers alike to exercise their political right to speak out against an illegal war. On October 26th, there will be a national march in Washington, D.C., and a West Coast march in San Francisco, and protests around the world. Enough said. Otherwise, you know, I guess I just have to say I agree with those folks. In entertainment news, Robert Redford and Larry Gilbert have apparently teamed up to make what is equivalent to Redford's movie The Candidate. Sequel to that. Can't wait to see it. It'll be great. Woody Harrelson will soon be featured in a special 75th anniversary tribute to the Three Stooges. You remember Woody, you know, the bartender in Cheers. I really liked him in White Men Can't Jump, frankly. I think he's great. Rod Stewart, he just did a great album. It's called It Had to Be You. Great American Songbook. Check that out. Love the old time songs, the kinds from the old 40s and 50s musicals. A secret crush on Doris Day. And, well, anyway, we don't want to get into that. Stewart's done an incredible job of delivering on about 10 tunes from that area. Maybe in the next report we'll do a special feature on it. It reminds me, in the saga of the Peter Gabriel album and me, I'm kind of attached to Cut 8 right now, the one called More Than This. It's what I really want to be thinking about, but I'm really into Cut 9. Afraid of what Cut 10 ultimately equates to, but now, the way I'm figuring it, because I'm kind of through the Gabriel album now, is I'm figuring that the next album that's going to turn up after Gabriel's, you know, to tell me what's going to happen next, for a lot of reasons I say this, by the way, but I'm going to bet you it's the Santana Shaman album. I'll get back to you on that. Some more music news, though. That is going to be great. A Santana album called Shaman. That is going to be a hot album. I always love his stuff. JT, I don't know, he seems to be racking it up these days. Making a bunch of money. He's got a good album out there, you know, October Road. Anyway, just got an email the other night from, what is it, CBS.com? Anyway, JamesTaylor.com, where they're now releasing, first of all, they're re-releasing the limited edition, which you could only get at first, and then they released the, and I'm not really sure why they did that, but they're going to get a double shot at your money. The limited edition, by the way, contains a few extra tunes, and they're really great. Includes some stuff with Mark Knopfler and Michael Brecker, and some really great tunes. Anyway, let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, and you know, oh, yeah. I was thinking about, you know, what if I actually ever did meet that guy? You know, what would I have to say to him? And I'm thinking, you know, let's see. If I added up all the tickets I've ever bought and all the albums and CDs and the transportation, you know, I figure I've spent about, well, easily over $2,000 going to hear that guy sing Fire and Rain again. And so I thought I'd write it all down, and if I ever did get a chance to meet him, I'd just hand him a bill, you know. Just trying to make some more points. Anyway, they put out, you know, they had that pay-per-view concert of him on, what was that, the Pullover tour? Pullover, dude. Anyway, they've got a DVD out on that now, and like I said, the limited edition is out, and I guess the unlimited edition, which has got less on it. Is still available. The next story is sort of a plug about an online business, although I do it just because I think it's a great idea, really, which is also one of those stories I have to chuckle at a little bit. Years ago, I could make the case for causing NBC and certain TV producers to change the music used in the background of TV shows. Really. I used to love the old Private Eye and crime mystery shows, but the music was so boring and old-fashioned, I would actually turn the sound down on the TV, put on my favorite album, mostly synthesizer music at the time, you know, Vangelis, Jan Hammer, Yes, Wakeman, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Patrick Moraz, and a whole lot of jazz. Anyway, after a few months, I began to miss the dialogue of the program, so I began this campaign of writing a letter and sending a fax to various NBC executives and musicians and entertainers entertainment executives about using what I called then the New Age classical artists, like the ones I mentioned whose music was perfect for the music pads. So I wrote letters to each of them every week for 3 months, and then decided it would have whatever effect it would have, and 6 months after I had begun that little project, 3 months after I stopped, the program Miami Vice came out. Every Friday night, the only person who knew I had done that and I got together and had a little victory party and watched Miami Vice and ate Chinese food. I mean, you just never know. Oh yeah, and Jan Hammer did the music for the show. All that said, since this world's values seem to be based on financial value, I'll only preface this next story about a really cool service that I intend to use by asking this question: don't I at least deserve a discount? All right, I'll let it go now. Online music company Listen.com will announce Thursday that it's signed licensing deals with Warner Music Group and Universal Music Group, enabling fans to burn songs from both companies' catalogs on Listen's Rhapsody Music subscription service. Warner is a unit of AOL Time Warner Incorporated, and Universal is a unit of Vivendi Universal. Listen.com is privately held. As of Monday, more than 75,000 tracks will be available for burning for 99 cents per track, including songs by artists like Bon Jovi, Nelly, and Eminem. Enabling consumers to burn songs onto blank CDs marks a milestone for Rhapsody as it seeks to compete with major label-backed services PressPlay and MusicNet, as well as free, unauthorized file-sharing services that have sprung up in the wake of now-idled Napster. You know, it's really amazed me, however, since dealing with Warner Brothers Records in high school, how much I find myself philosophically aligned with the way the Warner Groups conduct business and actually promote the arts. It drives me nuts, actually, to have to admit it. It's like the recommending CNN thing. I just, you know, say it the way I believe it is. Not sure what it means. I just keep agreeing with those folks, and, you know, I try not to, but I do. They've usually been there with the good ideas. Nonetheless, because there are worse things. Just wish I could sound a little more objective, but could be worse things. Finally, in entertainment news, another sad note. This is in the passing of legendary performer Richard Harris, who, among other things, played King Arthur in the classic production of Camelot. He also had a hit song in the late 60s that I'll include in the mix tonight called MacArthur Park. He died in a hospital at the age of 72. It's reported he had been suffering from Hodgkin's disease. Movie fans remember Harris for a host of roles, a rugby player in the Sporting Life, Cain in the Bible, King Arthur in Camelot, title role in A Man Called Horse, and Marcus Aurelius in Gladiator in 2000. And Harris was best known to modern audiences for his portrayal of Dumbledore, the kindly and wily head of Hogwarts School, in Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, and also Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, the latter due out in November. Harris was nominated for Oscars twice for This Sporting Life and The Field. He also had a major hit on the pop charts, of course, like I said, Jimmy Webb's MacArthur Park in 1968, narrowly missing knocking the Beatles' Hey Jude out of the top spot. He, too, will be missed. In the world of stocks and financial reporting, this comes from the Lou Dobbs Moneyline program on CNN. Whole show yesterday was great, a lot of good info. It would really be worth reading the transcript. Go check that out. Covers everything from the details of the D.C. sniper case to coverage of the biggest case of bank fraud ever, that by Jan Hopkins. This story about the stock market, too, though, is about three-quarters of the way down on the page in the transcript. He talked about the way Standard & Poor's new core earnings reports affect profit and loss statements, as well as what he believes provides the most accurate representation of a company's financial performance. All of this is important, of course, when considering what companies to invest in and what the numbers really mean to you. Standard & Poor's today released its own calculation of corporate earnings that it hopes will become the benchmark for Wall Street and investors. This is from the program, by the way. S&P's new definition of core corporate earnings treats pension funding and restructuring costs differently and expenses stock options. The result of S&P's new definition of core earnings is, of course, to slightly and significantly, in most cases, lessen profits. This part, by the way, is why it's worth reading the transcript. There's a lot of numbers that are needed in, to compare in order to make sense of this. These, by the way, are the words of Lou Dobbs. Old Uncle Lou. As reported, profits from the four quarters ended June 30th shows the S&P 500 with earnings of almost $27 per share and a price-to-earnings ratio, by the way, of 33.5. Applying the S&P's new definitions of core earnings to the same period, profits would have been almost 18.5. And as a result, the P/E ratio skyrocketed to 48.5. And if you want to feel a lot better, you can take a look at profits as operating earnings, which look at profits as nearly 41.6 and reduces the P/E to 21. Not surprisingly, companies prefer to look at numbers on that operating basis. Others refer, however, to operating earnings approach as the EBBS, or earnings before the bad stuff. On his broadcast, they prefer Standard & Poor's core earnings. On Wall Street today, the Dow suffered the highest, biggest decline in more than 1 week. All the major markets fell at least 1.5%. That despite today's sell-off, the broader market still up more than 6% on the month. Two-thirds of all S&P 500 companies have now reported their earnings. Christine Romans did a report. And Lou asked her, how do earnings look? And she said, well, there's the companies are reporting earnings, and there are a lot of caveats. There's a lot of talk about underfunded pensions, a lot of talk about stock options, and don't forget cost-cutting, a lot of cost-cutting for these companies. An example today, Eastman Kodak reporting profit up 66%, but it's going to cut 1,700 jobs. Revenue is up just 1%, so you can see the cost-cutting there. That, like I said, was from Lou Dobbs' Moneyline program. In my view, what this tells us, though, in terms of the health of our economy, is that corporations may be making adjustments to make their financial positions better, their profitability better, but it ultimately means fewer jobs and tough economic conditions for consumers. Something tells me when Al gets elected again, we'll turn this thing around. Oh, yeah. Favorite bumper sticker of the day. You'll like this. Regime change begins at home. And that's a wrap. This is Charles at democraticfundamentalism.org. You have a great one.